Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Lyle.
I'm Wayne.
All right, well, this is the first episode where we know we actually have listeners.
Welcome, everybody!
They're friends and family, but listeners nevertheless. Thank you very much. So we actually, because they are our friends, or not our friends, I don't know, we have some listener feedback.
All
right. I mean, that's great. Of course, there was some feedback about sound, so thank you for that. We followed up on that advice, and hopefully they'll see a steady
increase in
improvement
sound
in the sound right. quality.
I hope.
But maybe not our fluid speech.
That's why they listen.
Still choppy. We also had from perhaps our first listener, DJ Sardaukar, and I think the first person to register on our website, www.idleredhands.com. Someone else will spell that because I tried to spell it before and was wrong.
It didn't work out.
I spelled the words correctly. I just didn't spell them
in the right order.
In the right order.
Which would be incorrect.
It's a word scramble.
So what was the feedback?
And the feedback was, actually, it was talking about the research for the con artist from episode one.
Oh, cool.
I had seen the Grifters, Matchstick Men, and that. He mentioned about Boiler Room, if I had seen that.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that would have been quite good. And I thought that was a really good movie. And I didn't mention it, although that would be great for a con artist. It's really good for the long con.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a movie like Boiler Room would be great if somebody wanted to like plan a whole story. Maybe not a very long one, but a story around the one con where all the characters play a different role in pulling off that con. I guess it's almost like a heist story.
So it's definitely a story that would have to be kind of run that way by the game master, not something you could just sort of drop in as a single character into an existing story.
Yeah, because the cons I looked at were ones that you could actually do kind of like little sidetracks or even when the story's...
At a slow point.
Thanks. Because it was your story. Before the story's really picking up, then you can do that because you don't really need a lot of the other players to be with you to do it.
Although any of them.
Yeah. They can all wait in the car as they did.
And let me tell you just how much fun that was.
You were off when you had the chance to play along. But in something like The Boiler Room, I think that could be a really interesting story where the people are all involved in planning how to pull it off and to make it. And there's a lot of different moving parts in that con. So then it becomes quite interesting if one of those parts breaks down or one of the characters gets a conscience and things like that. So yeah, Boiler Room. So
there's a new
definitely
game system
good advice
out there. I don't know. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's designed specifically for that kind of game, like a heist or something.
Game system meaning a pen and paper RPG or a video game.
RPG.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. It's kind of has like a benefits point, like a Benny's in Savage Worlds, where if you roll well, you can kind of spend a point to say, like, I set up something in the past. It's kind of like those flashbacks.
Oh, I think I've heard about that.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
And then the opposite, if you rolled really poorly, then the GM can spend a point and, like, throw something in
a
your
monkey
way.
Wrench.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but we'll put it in the show notes afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, it might be something.
It looks like a lot of fun. I really love that kind of genre, so I'd love to play a game in that.
Well, when I do the noir game, it's going to be kind of where everybody's involved in putting together a plan that's going to be illegal. It is noir. So I'm going to definitely maybe look at that to see. I'm going to do the World of Darkness system for the noir game, but
cool.
Look at that maybe to see what else I could add to it to make it more fun.
Looking forward to it.
Slightly off topic, but you know what might be a good book for you to check out is the World of Darkness Mirrors book.
Yeah, I recommended that to you as well.
Yeah, it pretty much completely sort of breaks apart different elements of the World of Darkness and gives you suggestions on how to tweak it or change things.
All right.
Yeah, it's like a world builder's book.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I remember you mentioning that before.
I remember you mentioning it.
Well, no one knew who I was looking at.
All right, yeah, fine. And both of us are, in fact, Chris, so it didn't matter. Did it? All right.
Thanks, Wayne.
Yeah, sure.
The other feedback, and I think this is something that we're definitely going to do something about, and considering we basically have a lot of very nice friends, very kind friends, who have zero interest in gaming, but have basically slogged through a couple episodes and the poor sound quality, which is improving. Thank you very much, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically having no idea what we're talking about, even to the point of not understanding when we say games versus our games, like a game system versus a game we're running that is Wayne's or Chris's or something like that. So one of our friends, John, recommended doing an introduction to gaming, and we are going to do that episode.
After much browbeating, I believe Chris agreed with us.
I was going to leave that unsaid, but yeah, sure. One of us was against it initially, but it's come around because it is a fantastic idea. Thank you, John. So we are going to do an introduction to gaming, which hopefully will still be interested for the hardcore gamers out there that are listening, but is designed to be kind of your gateway game podcast, so to speak. So we're really excited about that, and only through feedback from the people that listen would we have even thought of doing something like that. So thank you very much.
And if anyone else has feedback, please send us a mail or a Facebook comment or something like that. Hey,
feedback. We'd love to hear it. Only help us get better.
So it's in your best interest, because we're going to keep asking what you think about that episode. We have an audio file who we force different episodes upon and say, okay, how's the audio this time?
Sucks.
I'm sure he's regretting the initial feedback. Oh, the audio could have been better. All right. But yeah, so that's fantastic. So we're really excited about that. So we're very pumped.
Yes.
Yeah.
So... unfortunately, I chipped my tooth. It's been kind of fixed, but I'm a corner of a tooth shy of dead sexy.
So if he sounds any less handsome this time, little, it has again to do with the teeth.
A little bummed out to be all in the teeth. Downgraded to sexy. You know, just normal sexy. I had it all.
I put on a kimono for my wedding photos yesterday. I looked damn fine in a kimono. Might have been upgraded to top sexy.
Top sexy?
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was a top sexy.
Well, there was, but until that chipped tooth, you know.
Oh, you're dead sexy, you know. You think you rest on your laurels, but there's a top sexy?
There is now.
Yeah, I abstain from this conversation.
We know.
Now, I haven't seen the movie. And I'm not sure if I ever will. It's the remake of Clash of the Titans. And this is actually related
to... You're selling this, man.
It's actually related to the topic that we're going to be discussing this episode. But it was an argument that the star of Clash of the Titans made, Sam Worthington. Apparently, he had a haircut that was cut too short. It was like a brush cut.
Or a crew cut. If I remember correctly, it was a buzz cut.
A buzz cut?
I would call it a buzz cut.
It was a buzz cut.
Yeah,
and people said that
his hair was cut very close to his head. It's all the same length.
And he said, and people objected to that because they said it wasn't a very Greek style. Mm-hmm. And he busted out, and he's probably not the first, but hopefully he'll be the last if people listen to this podcast, to make this argument. And he said, in a movie where you have flying horses, you can't have somebody with a different hairstyle. And I'd say, no, you can't, you know, because people are buying into the flying horses because that's the mythology, but you're still a Greek soldier. Yeah. Or a Greek hero, so you're gonna be Greek.
You should look Greek,
right?
Yeah, you should play that part. And I thought that was just about the biggest cop out argument I've ever heard. And you hear that a lot. You know, well, when you're in a world of flying dragons or in a world of elves and dwarves, why can't we have that? Well, you can't, because that's not part of that world. And the world they created, it does have a Kraken, it does have Pegasus, it does have a Medusa, but you know something, it has Greeks walking through that world and interacting with that Medusa the Kraken. So you hear that argument far too much, and I think that's just got to stop. And that kind of leads into our topic about... No, not kind of. It does lead into our topic.
Man, you set yourself up incredibly well, and you didn't realize it until just then.
Yeah. A genius. It just pours forth. Today we're going to be talking about, in the episode Identity Crisis, we're going to be talking about playing different genders and then ethnicities. In games where, like, changing your race, be it elf, dwarf, or werewolf, where that is often given no more thought than changing your underwear, although hopefully one is done with a greater frequency than the other, it's often easy to ignore that, or easy not to give much attention to playing different ethnicities and genders of the human race. Now, this could be because playing these fantastic races gives us that kind of outlet to spread our acting wings. It also could be because people are colorblind and can't see the differences between the different peoples of the world. Or it could be because that this is kind of a sensitive topic and people don't want to go there. Well, in this episode, we're going to go there. We're going to be looking at playing these different ethnicities and the two genders, what to consider if you do, and even whether you should. We're not going to ignore playing fantasy folk or alien races, but they're definitely going to be at the back of the bus for this episode. Whoa. So, all right. Dirty look to Chris aside. So, okay. Wayne, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'll start. I'm going to start with a very strong point, and I think ethnicity should virtually be a non-factor when portraying a character in a game.
That's a pretty strong opinion, yes.
If I understood what that meant.
Okay.
It sounds strong, but in other words,
I think in determining how you would play your character or how to portray a character, ethnicity should be at the far bottom of the list, trumped by things such as socioeconomic status, culture, and time period. Because my feeling is they have a vastly larger role in a person's personality.
Okay.
I disagree.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I agree or disagree.
Okay.
I need more clarification.
All right.
Do you want to disagree first, or should I?
Let's get that clarification all first. Because right. I might not disagree if it's a better put.
Okay. Playing a woman.
Okay.
Playing a woman now versus playing a woman.
But he was saying ethnicity.
Yes, I specifically said ethnicity.
Okay,
we haven't touched on gender yet.
All right, so playing an African American now versus playing an African American even in the 60s or 50s.
Okay, so I'm.
So gonna, you're
I,
still.
I have a point also, that I disagreed on as well.
I have also specifically said, maybe I didn't say, I have said time period.
No, that's why I said in the 50s and 60s. So, but still, ethnicity is playing a role there.
A very big role.
Okay. But you're saying how you play it changes based on time period, and
yes,
I agree.
Yes, I'm
but
not saying...
it's still an important role.
I agree.
An important factor.
I'm saying that there is no inherent quality in the pigment of your skin, the color of your hair, eyes, the shape of your nose, whatever, that dictates how you will react to a given situation.
And I disagree on that.
Okay, fair enough. So to use the time period example, I consider that an external life experience. So in other words, how people react to your ethnicity based in a sort of a historical setting is more an external factor. Yes, it is triggered by your ethnicity, but I see that as something you experienced rather than who you are. I think you wanted to...
Just to back up for a second. So have you ever played another ethnicity or gender?
I've played another gender. I have not played another ethnicity.
Okay. You did play an Asian as an NPC.
Yes.
Yeah, an Asian person.
I have both played another gender and another race, both as a player and as a GM.
Can I ask what ethnicity you played?
Actually, Asian.
Okay.
Stereotypical Asian. Okay.
No, for ethnicity, and only recently as a playing my first woman in your pulp campaign. So, and we'll get to that. But I actually had the reason why I played it. It was a role in the party, as we had established, is that there would be in the 1930s pulp genre, there would be the kind of sassy woman, the perhaps be either related somehow to some of the characters as the daughter or sister or even be a love interest. I opted to be the daughter.
And this is a real departure from your standard character, your sassy Eladrin or your sassy con artist.
I actually think, you know, well, we can get into that when we talk a little bit more about gender, but I actually think I'm playing a woman. So,
okay.
Well, thanks for... Wow, you know, a little critique on my acting abilities. Well, Mr. Range, oh, Scottish again? Oh, okay. Is that what you're counting as ethnicities, playing a Scottish person? Wow.
That's why I asked.
Mr. Stretch.
That's why I asked what ethnicity has to play,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. So,
I mean, I wasn't trying to do it quite as sarcastically, but...
I didn't play a white guy, I played another kind of white guy.
Exactly. All right. I don't know where to pick up again. The example I have, right?
Well, I think the point was you said is that... Oh, actually, you were talking about how, to jump back in, is you were saying that ethnicity is not a factor. I kind of wish we could say race, but I know it's not. We're not supposed to say race. It's just easier to say than ethnicity.
Yeah.
But anyway, ethnicity should not be a factor in how you play your character, or should be the last thing you consider in terms of things like socioeconomic status and the time period are much, much greater. And I think this is where you contradict yourself.
Okay.
In that you're talking about how ethnicity should not play a factor because ethnicity is internal. And you're saying, really, it only comes up when you're interacting with the external things.
Right.
Period. But then time period is external, so you say that's more important. So
That's exactly what I was disagreeing with.
Right.
As well,
okay.
Is that, you know, the color of your skin, your face shape, whatever, that affects how other people treat you. And time period definitely takes a place in that, where you are in the world. Here in Japan makes a big difference as well. But yeah, I'd say race is important when interacting with other people.
And also, sorry, just to jump on Chris's point there, how people are treating you is going to affect how you are as a person.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, how do you feel about yourself? Like, how do you view this world?
No, I
mean, is going to be internalized, and that basically is going to play a role in shaping your character.
I agree. Okay, so I'll
and shaping your personality.
I'll use a couple of examples. So I do agree that ethnicity and gender do have a hand in shaping your personality.
Right.
And that's because things like racism, sexism, and other forms of discrimination still exist.
Right.
And that will take a larger or smaller role in your game based on the setting. So, for example, if you're playing in, say, the American Civil War, and you play an African-American, yes, that will have a very large role in saying what kind of character you play. If you then take, say, a, by his own words, vanilla setting, such as 4E D&D, the Red Hand campaign that we played, in that one, race is essentially a non-factor.
Unless
or ethnicity. Ethnicity in that one, right? Nobody asked what color the skin of major NPC was in terms of... Well, okay, we had the fantasy races, which I wanted to touch on later.
Mm-hmm. That's something that I've always thought is characteristic of D&D. With there being other non-human races, it seems that the races of humans would play a much less...
And that's kind of my point, is what I'm saying. Right?
Yeah.
That's just the way I see it, maybe.
I think in the Vanilla 4E, I think when you get into like an established setting, mm-hmm. Like for example, Greyhawk,
yeah.
I think that they have the white, they're not even white supremacists, I guess they're human supremacists, they're all white in the Scarlet Brotherhood.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
But they have chosen to enslave humanoids and things like that. And of course, they want to take over the entire Greyhawk world. But you do have different ethnicities in that, and like the you know the Saudi Arabian or Persian cultures. Of course, they look like the Persian cultures of our world. The Viking barbarians look like are all Scandinavian.
Yeah.
Like, but what if they were all black or brown or something like that, or maybe more Asian looking? I mean,
I'm actually kind of going to jump in right there because you said the word culture, which I think has a much larger... I see ethnicity and culture being two separate things.
And I think that's unnecessarily reductionist. I mean, you can say...
Claws come out, okay.
Well, no, it's just...
I always gave the look because the dictionary came out.
It just, like, you can say that ethnicity is... ethnicity, then, okay, that doesn't count. Culture is more important because there's lots of black people around the world, there's lots of white people around the world, and the different culture entails more about the personality. You could say that, but sure, you could also say then it goes down to which neighborhood they live in the city, which city they live in. And you can go even further down to that and say, what about their individual character? I mean...
Is it my culture, the reason why I can't get a cab at midnight?
Rough. Okay.
Dum, dum, dum.
All right, but...
Sorry.
No, that's a good point.
It's not to say that I disagree with your idea, but I think you're kind of just dividing up a different aspect of culture. Because you could say that there is a white culture. I don't know how true or untrue it is. But, you know, we're talking about games that we're making up, so you can make it as true or untrue.
But, I mean, like, even if you look in literature, I mean... Literature is full of kind of the outsider being raised by another culture, such as Tarzan or Mowgli from the Jungle Book. Both of them being raised by animals.
Right, but they're not animals.
No, they're not animals.
So if you say, like, he's raised in that culture, he's still human, and he's different from both the rest of the human race, because Tarzan was raised by apes, but he's also different from the apes.
Right, okay.
I think that supports what Chris is saying, is that still there's that... Yeah,
the biological fact that he's a human.
Right.
The other one I had was the Phantom.
Right.
He was raised by... Wasn't he raised by an indigenous tribe, sort of?
That's what you're going to say. He was raised by phantoms.
No. Or even if you want to go Superman. I mean, Superman technically was raised by aliens.
Right, but the effect of the really good Superman stories kind of play on... He's an alien.
Right.
Or he's a Kryptonian, but he's also part of Earth. And how he's always an alien. He's always got that difference. But he's also got that Kansas culture,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
that American culture. And to play up on that, he is, yeah, he's the stranger in a strange land.
I've
but
heard
he's
that line a couple
he's
of
embraced.
You've got to make the man more important than the super. And that's a really good line.
Oh, fair enough. My point is...
Yeah, who is the real Superman? Who is the real Clark Kent? And it's like, is it Superman who is like just the superhero? Is it Clark Kent, the, you know, farm boy from Kansas? Is it...
Jor-El. Kal-El.
Kal?
Kal-El.
Kal-El.
Kal.
Cool.
The Kryptonian. So, again, that gets into culture and ethnicity, that is quite an interesting combo. And the clash, the internal clash within a person is really interesting as well. But I don't, you can say one is, which one is more important than the other in that character, that's for you to decide.
Okay.
I think it's kind of, it's almost better to look at it from the opposite angle, is to say, like, this is my character, this is his character, what he's like, and these are the different influences on his character, and some of those would be his wraith. His race, the time period, his wraith. His wraith by phantoms.
His wrath.
The time period that he's in, what he does for a living. I mean, would be good to choose for your character how he defines himself.
Hmm.
Like, I don't consider myself really a white guy. If I were to define myself, what are you? I'd probably choose my occupation before my race.
Yeah, fair enough. I was just using those as examples to show that...
I choose your call. Country. For you.
Country.
Oh. For me.
Anyway, I was using those examples to show that human beings are adaptable, right? If there was something that prevented different ethnic groups from being absorbed into separate cultures, you wouldn't have those stories.
And I definitely hear what you're saying.
Why I kind of rank ethnicity below culture.
I'm going to say, if you don't want to play up or incorporate or do something with the ethnicity, if you're going to play a different ethnicity and you don't want to do anything with that,
mm-hmm.
I say don't do it. Don't play it. Play your own ethnicity. You want to be vanilla, then be vanilla.
No, that's fine.
And vanilla can mean an African-American playing an African-American, an Asian playing an Asian. But I think you should try to tell that story. And whether, like, for example, playing like a half-orc. If you want to play a half-orc raised in a human world, then why? What is that interesting story? How did that shape your person? Are they bitter or are they really optimistic? Because it's actually a reaction to what, all that pressure externally, is they become very optimistic and they look for the good in all people because that's what they want.
That's what's more
other
important.
People to do
it's,
that.
It's not what they are, it's how they deal with it, what they do with it.
Yeah.
Maybe we should move on, but I kind of think that supports my point, what you said, not who they are, but how they deal with it.
But still, the fact, what is their reaction to that? Why are they ignoring it? So, for example, I had an NPC half-orc.
Right, yeah.
And why are they a half-orc? Because the mother was raped.
Right.
Right? The mother died in childbirth, right? And then kind of like he had like kind of a happy, outside of the town, encounters a lot of racism.
Mm-hmm.
But inside the town, they're very, very supportive and stuff like that. So then he becomes even more optimistic, even like a pure soul,
mm-hmm.
because he's always looking for the good in other people, regardless of what their race is, what their ethnicity is, and things like that. So that shapes him as an NPC. But it was a number of factors. It was the external loving environment. It mm-hmm. was choosing the mother's choice to bring him to term. So a very turning a negative into a positive, not letting any racism that he encountered bring him down and things like that, because people just don't know. And if I show, that I'm a good person, I can change their minds and things like that. Like something bad in the past doesn't have to be bad in the present or in the future and stuff. But then his race, because it's an orc or whatever, shapes who he is.
Hmm.
And I thought that made that a richer character.
No, it did.
To say, I'm a half or
no, I then
kind of interacts, and sometimes people don't like to be nice to me, and they're a little gruff around me.
Hmm. Half-orc, that's why I use an axe.
Yeah. No, that's fine, and I appreciated playing with that character.
Yeah.
I guess Chris would call this like splitting hairs or subdividing stuff, but I guess I sort of separated. Yeah.
I think Chris would call it semantics.
Yes,
he's been using the dictionary.
Right. Okay. So
I smart.
I smarter. So yeah, I saw that as it was an external factor triggered by the race, but I thought of that more as an indirect reason rather than specifically tied to race. It's triggered by race, but I saw it, or ethnicity, but I saw it as slightly separate, because things like that could potentially happen to anyone.
I think sure, some people are look different, but are pretty much the same, I guess, where they're raised or whatever. And they opted to embrace the same culture, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get into whether it's a white culture, a black culture, an Asian culture, even within the same country.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just makes it more interesting. If you're going to play the other ethnicity, then play up some differences, I would think.
No, I definitely agree. Like, don't just say, I'm this.
Well, absolutely. If you're going to ignore the ethnicity that you've chosen, then why choose it?
Yeah, then why choose it? And so, yeah, I would say, if you do choose to play another ethnicity, put some thought into how that has shaped
your character.
What about
embracing stereotypes?
Do
you think that enriches the experience, or do you think it... I mean, obviously, embracing stereotypes can be offensive.
Now, as I said before in the first one, culture-wise, I think if you kind of, when we talked about like Japan, right, embracing kind of like maybe like cultural stereotypes wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, because in a game you kind of have to, not force, but I would say exaggerate certain things to make them feel like the culture they are.
There's a big difference, though, between doing it as a player and as a GM. I think as a GM, I use a lot more stereotyping than I do as a player. As a player, I'm usually looking to break stereotypes. Mm,
yes.
But as a GM, I often do that just to drive home the point that this NPC is, say, different from other NPCs.
And I think I'm, well, I was going to agree with that.
A non-player character, it plays a role within a story.
Absolutely.
Any secondary character would in a book or a movie. They're there to do something.
Yeah, and it's not only
they're not there,
stereotypes, you know, but class stereotypes. Mm. Anything that I can to just differentiate this one in the minds of the players.
Mm.
But more like it's more important to say from a character angle, in which case, I try to break a lot of stereotypes. But I might embrace some.
As a player.
Yeah. And the Scottish guy, no.
You've read my mind.
He's about as dyed-in-the-wool Scottish as you can get.
No, I was going to say, I think I agree. Because, when you're playing a game, you have a non-player character. You don't, as a storyteller or a DM, you don't want to spend a lot of time describing this character, so stereotypes become quite useful, because you can just say a few words and the players kind of, you know, for better or worse, get an image in their mind of what this character looks like, and as you said, Chris, then it's the NPCs or non-player characters that break then those stereotypes that become the memorable characters.
Well,
right?
That's another point to it as well. Is like if you, as a GM, if you're
If they break the stereotypes, they become memorable.
Memorable,
an NPC, but we should use the stereotypes to make them memorable.
No. I'm saying stereotypes are useful to give your players a quick idea of character. So, for example, we went to the Elven village in the Red Hand's campaign, right?
Okay.
I mean, you just say they are elves or
Elven nobility.
Yeah, exactly. Elven nobility. And because we have stereotypes attached to those, especially in fantasy worlds, the players already have a picture in their
minds. Okay, I got that part, but
right.
then you say...
Then if you want to make a memorable NPC, break that stereotype for individual characters.
And even more than NPCs, for situations.
I think what you're really just saying is that if you want to make... If you have a more prominent NPC, you put more time into it.
Yeah. If you want to boil it down to that,
The thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It also used for situations as well. If you get the characters seeing that you're following a lot of stereotypes, if you break something on them quickly, then it can turn around what they were expecting. Surprise.
Hmm.
Make a more interactive campaign.
But if you're doing should you try to work in different stereotypes in your? Does that play a factor?
Depends on your game. Or what kind of emotion you're trying to. Or story you're trying to tell.
Okay. Yeah, I playing against stereotypes, just thinking, like, for example, talk to this guy, friend Jared, about movies a lot, and we were talking about, like, casting, like, different superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, an idea I had, was casting Captain America, get an African-American actor as Captain America. And I thought that would be quite interesting to do, because Captain America, for those people that don't know, is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white guy.
Yeah.
But also Captain America is a symbol of the of America, the USA, and things like that. Yes. Hence the name and the costume. But I thought,
if
you cast him as an African-American, it could have been quite a rich... Could have added different levels to the story.
Yeah, do you remember the fuss that was thrown up when they made James Bond blonde?
But what story does that tell, making him blonde? If, for example, with James Bond, it's like, if people have the image that this guy, because of who's played him, although Roger Moore, I think, had brown hair. So it's not like he really had like black hair throughout
like
all his
Connor
incarnations.
Wasn't black either. So,
but if you change him to blonde, you could say, well, because his hair color doesn't matter. But for a lot of people, it does matter because they have that iconic image. Mm, so,
right.
What are you trying to say by changing it to a blonde-haired actor? And from what I understand, David Craig didn't last too many movies anyway. So,
I'm making a third one now.
Really? I thought they were recasting.
Oh, really? I heard that it was the same. Anyway.
Anyway. But for choosing to an African, and Jared had the good point. But why? Why make him African American? Because you couldn't just make him. Couldn't take an iconic character, change the ethnicity, unless you had a point. My point was, it's an experimental drug, and because the Tuskegee Airmen, where they did experiments on them and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So it's like it's along those lines. is basically they have an experimental drug to change this weakling into a super soldier. They'll choose an African-American guy before they would choose a white person because they're less. This is in the 30s and 40s. And if people that are familiar with the story of Captain America, after Steve Rogers gets the injection, the doctor who made the formula gets killed and they lose the formula. Hmm. So that's why he's the only super soldier.
Right.
So that's what happened. Same story, except the test subject, the African-American, is the guy that they're stuck with. So then what did they do? Instead of having the open mask where you can see that the color of it, have his skin around his mouth, they have a closed mask.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then maybe Bucky is the sidekick, and Bucky's white, and Bucky knows the secret. And then it's like top secret, and then following the Captain America storyline, you get him in, they rediscover him in the 60s or whatever, when the movie is going to make him rediscover. Hmm. Boom, they go, oh, and he's black. I didn't know that. And it's like people didn't know that he was black. And I thought that would be quite interesting.
Be.
And then he's kind of contrasting. It's like, now people are they okay with it? Are they okay with having this icon as a African American? And one of the reasons I initially suggested, it just broadens your field, who you could have cast in that movie. And it's like, yeah, choose the best actor. But if you're going to choose an African-American actor, wow, this is a story that you could tell.
Will Smith.
I think he's a little bit too old. And actually, I think the guy in Chuck, Ryan McPartland, he would have been perfect. But the guy they chose, Chris Evans, pretty good. Hmm. Pretty good choice. But anyway, but that gets into it. If you're going to do it, have a reason to do it.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
Cool.
And what about gender? So you've separated gender.
Yes. In my opinion, gender plays a larger role in who your character is than ethnicity.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
My feeling is you take sort of a test subject group, if you will. You take a group of the same socioeconomic status men and women. I kind of imagined that their experiences, while different, would be more comparable inside the same sex group than across them.
Well, how would that change how you play?
Well, I'm not saying I have no.
So would a female police officer be played differently than a male police officer?
Yes. Yeah, I agree with Chris. Yes, I think it would.
Okay.
Men and women think differently. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are biological differences. I mean, yes.
Different. Okay.
like, are the differences? That's a whole other can of worms. But
Well, then why is it a can of worms? And here's something that I think: if you're going to play a woman, and if you're going to pretend you're not white, or if you're going to play an Asian and you're not Asian, a different ethnicity. I probably could have.
Yeah.
You're going to play a different ethnicity or the opposite gender. I think a good thing is, yeah, sure, embrace stereotypes, sure. But would you be willing to play in front of a woman? Would you be willing to play in front of that ethnicity if you're going to do it?
Yes.
And if you think that everybody would be comfortable at the table with you playing it and embracing whatever stereotypes that you are, then that's probably a good kind of good guide of whether or not you're going too far. So I just...
Well, you're playing a woman now, would you?
Would I play the woman that I'm playing right now in front of a woman?
Yes.
Sure, yes. Hmm. But I might have thought... Hey, why don't you play the female character and I'll play a male character?
Yeah.
Because they might have, I mean, they're a woman, so they're going to have a little advantage.
Yeah. So as our preeminent researcher here into their character, you say you do a lot of looking into playing character. And you also said a moment ago that you're very proud of how you're playing the current woman as a woman.
Well, apparently it's rubbish. It's no different than any other character I played.
You know, you would have done better if you played a Scottish person. But what have you done? Like, how are you playing the character that makes them so womanly?
Basically, I've just been looking at, like, actresses. And, you know, of course, actresses playing, like, Carrie Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
Not only Princess Leia, but I don't know if you ever watched Carrie Fisher in an interview. She's quite funny, she's quite sharp and things like that. So basically, I'm trying to channel Carrie Fisher.
Okay.
In the role. And Christy Swanson in The Phantom.
Okay.
Mm. I'm basically trying to combine those two. Kind of the youthful element of Christy Swanson in the Phantom with
sarkiness of Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. Yeah. So sure. And then my funny double entendre of a little scotch in my belly.
That's the thing. I don't really see a woman making that kind of a joke though.
I know that's funny. I couldn't resist
that. It was a good joke.
We weren't disputing the validity of whether it was funny or not.
Mm.
Sorry, what? An example?
Yeah.
I guess how I handled, like, I also have to be aware how people react to women.
Yeah.
When, for example, like, knocking on a hotel room door.
Yeah.
If you're a man and another man answers that door and you're just... how you would react to that? Like, what kind of ruse would you use for knocking on the wrong hotel room door?
Yeah.
So I did it as, like, I met the person and they told me to come up to the room because probably in the... I'm playing the woman in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. So... a woman traveling around on her own is a little unusual and something worth commenting on, and figuring that me going up to a hotel room knocking on doors, it's not just a mistake. Oh, I was invited up for a romantic liaison and things like that. I don't know if I'm just playing women as sex objects or not, but I think in that case I'm acknowledging that a woman would be viewed that way. Mm-hmm. Also, a woman would be viewed probably as less intelligent than a man. So therefore, they would be given a little bit more leeway. Mm-hmm. They say something stupid, then people go, yeah, that was a stupid thing to say. Well, what do you expect? And things like that. So then I do kind of have that freedom, in a sense, to do stuff or to play up my weakness and then turn the tables. And it's like, oh, I'm not as weak. You know, I've been studying this stuff since I was a little girl because my dad's a professor.
Now, I'm actually glad you brought that up because that was one of the points I had as someone who, out of the group, plays women player characters most frequently.
Mm-hmm.
The big shocking reason that I usually do that is because nobody else does. I think that groups consisting of same-sex player characters are losing out on a lot of role-play or problem-solving tools. As you just said, like, you know, a man knocking on a hotel door to gather information doesn't have the same options
Has different options
than a woman doing it. And, you know, classic examples are, okay, you have a group of adventurers, they're all men. Well, the option of, you know, sort of flirting your way past that palace guard or whatever is off the table unless the guard happens to be opposite gender.
Or gay.
Which I would, you know, I was going to bring up. So, basically, I think...
gay is not a gender.
No.
I just have to go.
Right. No, anyway, the point I made is, like, for example, in the Changeling game that I'm running, all the players are male. So, I didn't specifically make non-player characters to fill love interest roles.
Okay.
It kind of happened.
We had the stripper with the heart of gold.
Yeah, you had the stripper with the heart of gold. I mean, yeah. I didn't set her up as to be
the Barbie doll with you.
Yeah, I just thought they were... I personally thought they were interesting characters. I didn't set them up specifically for love interests.
Okay.
But, I mean, that kind of developed. But now, if someone does, say, want a love interest, as a storyteller, I specifically have to drop it in... Damn it, I talk with my hands a lot. Sorry. I specifically have to drop in an opposite gender NPC or a same-sex NPC if the player character is gay, where, like, if you kind of start right from the beginning with a mixed group of player characters, any of the game master or non-player characters has the potential to develop into a love interest, or, as I said, with the smooth talking went past a guard. It just, I think, broadens the tools that the players have at their disposal.
Why not have more female guards then?
And for that matter, why would a guy not be able to smooth talk their way past a guard? Granted, they wouldn't be able to do it in a sexual
way.
I was saying flirting.
I meant
a different way.
I meant it in a different way.
But that's still, you know, granted, flirting is a way that...
But it is a different... It would play differently. I see his point.
Yeah, I'm just saying that...
No, stop.
You want the shovel again?
What was I going to say?
Oh, why not have more female...
Because then you're basically saying that all the guards are male in the world.
Well, you could. I mean...
But you could do that if the party chooses to be... Everybody chooses to be a male, then to play up those options, you could have more female guards.
It's something to get away with in role-playing games, because in most role-playing... In fact, I don't know any that make a difference between men and women.
I say historical settings.
I see. If you're trying to play realistically.
Yes, if you're playing in a historical setting, then they'll have
variety. That's true. It's very true.
But yeah, in a vanilla fantasy setting, then you should.
I think
you could very easily. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, because I think that was a really good point you raised, Chris, is that, yeah, because, of course, they want to encourage women, more women to play games and playing RPGs and that, which is fantastic. Have they gone too far by saying, makes no difference whether you're a male or a woman. It's not going to make any difference on your physical stats or any other any of your statistics. Mm-hmm. And in the world, it makes no difference. You could have a queen. They could all be queens.
Yeah.
You know. And
there's kind of it's a really sticky situation to go mm-hmm. in. If you make a mechanical difference, you also have to worry about game balance. That's an important part of any game, right?
Right.
If you make a mechanical difference between men and women, you have to balance it somehow. So granted, men generally have larger or stronger physiques. Okay, you can give that as an advantage to a male character. What's the balance for a female character?
Yeah.
No, I absolutely. Like, mechanically, which is what... Actually, I didn't want to go there, although I did say statistics. Mm-hmm. But have they made it so that they've kind of sucked out the options then? Like, you know, if you make a world... if you have a more historical setting, then people do have to think about it more. Like, for example, the 1930s pulp game, Tom, who's playing the main character, your Doc Savage or Indiana Jones, mentioned he wanted to do like a Blade mm-hmm. from the movie Blade, which raised the question: is does Tom mean he wants to play an African American mm-hmm. in the 1930s, or he had kind of like
Tom shaking his head? I took it to mean yes.
No, but also then he had the background similar to Batman, mm-hmm. or actually in the 1930s, it was quite common that they would go to the monastery in Nepal and learn all these, like, the mystic arts and martial arts and things like that, because it was very exotic. But does that mean Tom wants to play an Asian in 1930s? And it was, so Wayne had to, like, Kitley suggest it as, like, okay, but if you play, and it turns out Tom didn't want, he wanted to play somebody as white as all of us. Thank goodness.
Except for me, I'm not white, I'm Scottish.
That if he were to choose to play someone who's African American or Asian, then in the 1930s, he would encounter all these external things, to use your words, Wayne.
And when that happened, not to go back to race, but I specifically said, this will not be coming up in my game. I do not want to deal with the issue of race at all in my game.
Yeah.
However, since this is set in the 1930s, it's going to be strange if the guy leading the team is not white.
So you admit that, like, the ethnicity...
Yes, I admit.
...does play an important role, but you were just going to whitewash... I don't know if... Like, if Tom, like, dug his heels in. Again, he didn't want...
Yeah, if Tom
dug his heels in, I want to play, you know, an African-American guy who looks like Wesley Snipes and kicks ass, and you would just, okay, 1930s African-Americans have equal rights. There's a black president. You know, so you would have, changed the world?
No, I wouldn't have changed the world. I would have simply ignored that sort of racial theme in the story.
So you would have taken away taken away that opportunity to really play something and for us to really get into the spirit of the 1930s.
Yeah, because in my opinion, the sort of the theme of my pulp game
adventure, ethnicity.
Yeah,
it's
adventure, and
Nazis.
I didn't want to explore the themes of race in the game.
All right.
You sound so disappointed.
I guess
you could tie it back to gender. Sorry, not to interrupt, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, then it's like, I play a woman, why do I play up any differences? Mm-hmm. Because I'm treated the same, and I'm just as strong as any man. And
you can do it for your own sake.
Yeah, but then is that interesting for me to play a woman? Then why am I playing a woman, you know?
If it's not interesting to you, then yeah, why would you be?
I don't know. But then we're going to change the way the 1930s views women? You know, I don't think that's very interesting either.
If it's not part of the kind of story that you're trying to tell, then... there is no point to it.
But it is part of the 1930s pulp.
Yeah.
Racism and sexism mm-hmm. is part of that story. I mean, you can change it now and say, but if you want to do like classic 1930s pulp, you had different ethnicities playing a very subservient role to mm-hmm. the main white man, mm-hmm. And you didn't have any female leads. So
right.
And that's we actually built it. We had the man, and our mm-hmm. image was he's a white guy.
Yeah.
And there's a female character. She is not going to be the leader of the group.
Right.
That's just a given because it's the 1930s
right.
pulp. And I want to push the envelope a little bit further with this noir game I'm planning. Mm-hmm. And there is actually going to be racism and sexism in that world. And players are going to could even be playing racist and sexist characters. If they want, they can play other ethnicities well. But then they're going to have to understand, that's great, you will be basically defined by what your ethnicity is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll say this, but you have specifically told us numerous times that this is going to happen in the noir game, so be prepared for it.
Yeah.
It's a theme we're going to explore.
Yeah.
So I don't see a problem with that.
Okay.
The way I sold pulp was Indiana Jones style adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is set in the 1930s, and yes, that's the way the kind of the real 1930s worked.
But even Indiana Jones worked. I mean, they don't explicitly say.
No, they don't.
His short round.
His friend, the Arab guy.
Yeah, but he's a secondary character.
Is what?
And short round isn't.
No, he's a secondary character.
Sorry.
As
yeah,
well.
Exactly. His friend, the Egyptian guy, is
Salat.
He is he's a secondary character in Egypt.
Yeah. Does Jones treat him differently?
Huh?
No, Jones doesn't treat him differently, but I'm sure that the Nazis do.
Well, of course, the Nazis shoot at him.
Yeah, but what...
Then they're Nazis.
Okay, fair.
At that point, it's like kind of...
Nazis are racist?
Yes, Nazis
Go
are
on.
Okay, so my...
But in that movie, would Salah ever get the girl? Get the white woman?
No, but I would say that's less a function of his race or his ethnicity than it is a function of him being a secondary character.
But he's a secondary
character because of his race. I would actually.
Like Indiana Jones would always would have
Jones
been white.
If Indiana Jones had a sidekick who was also white, do you think that sidekick would get the girl?
Possibly.
Really?
Oh, no, he wouldn't get the main girl.
Oh, Indiana Jones 4. I know people don't want to remember Indiana Jones 4, but
my friend was raped in Peru.
Don't you remember he was raped? And about that, like he does has a sidekick in his son who's white.
Right.
I can't remember the movie.
At the end of the movie, the son gets the hat.
Exactly. So. They're trying to pass the torch to, so that's also different. In fact, I'd say the son is maybe even the main character.
Not to get into different things, but with Raiders of the Lost Ark, they were capturing 1930s pulp. So you have the white guy is the leader. Mm-hmm. He is the focus of the story. He's the protagonist. Yes. There would never have been any question of... In the 1980s, to do a pulp homage and then throw in an African American character, or have Salah as I'm a Egyptian American, and of course I know a lot about Egypt. I was born there.
Mm-hmm.
There would have any question. The female character was always going to be secondary. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't explicitly say, notice there's not many black people in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But because people just accept that's 1930s.
Right.
When it was Indiana Jones Temple in the Temple of Doom, then you have Short Round. You could make a case he was...
He didn't get the girls either.
He was like, hey, come on!
I'm kidding.
Yeah, I don't know how offensive... I don't know if he was the Jar Jar Binks of the 80s, but or whether he was offensive or not. As a kid, I was young when I watched it, I didn't think he was...
He has some good jokes, I'll say that.
Mr. Jones. I mean, is that offensive to have you?
You cheated.
Yeah. I cheat very small. You cheat big. Anyway, all right.
So I mean, he's playing what the Asian character would play in the pulp. He's playing a very secondary, in that case, a comedic role.
Right. I'm still saying that I think that role is more important than race or class in that kind of story. Did I say class?
No,
if you make it that way, but then my point was, if you do make it that way, then you're kind of...
Why change
the genre a little bit, and people are free to do that, and I understand. Yeah. That's why people, although a lot of the sword and sorcery books that we, like Conan and that, those are a subgenre of pulp, actually, have women in very subservient roles, or as villains. But yeah, of course, if you want to encourage more female gamers, people are going to identify with their own gender or their own ethnicity, so you want to have that them more prominently displayed, where they could be the knight, not necessarily the damsel in distress, which can be fun to play once, but I'm sure they're not going to show up week after week to play the victim.
I guess kind of going back to the original thing about have games gone too far in promoting this equality, I'll say they've gone far enough for the player characters, the people playing the characters, the main characters in the story.
The players
sitting around the table. I don't think they've maybe gone far enough for setting wise. As you just said, why not have...
Like, we live in a society that values political correctness.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you say Palace Guard, the guy that pops into your head is a big, burly, muscle-bound guy.
Yeah.
So...
Or it's like an Amazon world or an Amazon kingdom or something. But I'm going to say, I think they've done a good job. And the answer to my own question is, in the generic settings, fantastic. Yeah, they've done a good job because they should promote that equality. Because people want to tend to play their own gender mm-hmm. and tend to play their own ethnicity, and they should really promote that if they want to have as many different people at the gaming table mm-hmm. as possible. So promote that equality and then have these generic worlds where
everybody's equal.
And you know, if you really want to play with racism and sexism, or not make a third gender. Sorry, if you really want to play with racism,
what?
you use a dwarf or an elf
or whatever, and maybe they're the subjugated race. Mm. But if because we also have the option of playing a historical setting, embracing all the good and all the bad of that historical setting, and playing out and exploring those issues, and if you had whitewashed pulp, then I would have been against that. If you were really trying to capture 1930s pulp and would have had whitewashed it, then I would have said then we're not really playing it, and we could have just played a modern pulp game or whatever, like a modern adventure game.
I'll say this: in the pulp game so far, ethnicity has not come up.
I'll disagree a little bit in that, like, you know, it we're kind of the white men just going through Egypt, and we're the ones making the decisions.
A whole bunch of white guys walked into an Egyptian bar, and everybody just started staring us down. I think, kudos to you. I think that was well done.
I thought that was because it was a
I tried to set it up because it's like, what the hell are you doing here? This is a
I thought it was because it was a criminal place.
I thought it was an ethnicity thing. So no, I mean, I was actually seeing all the rich people in Egypt.
Oh, are white.
Yeah, all the rich people.
So ethnicity is playing a role, and that's. That's what, good, you know, idea. you don't have to like it.
Yeah, and
but that's that we're playing it. You know,
not to defeat my own point, but that is not a major theme of the game, right? That's not a major theme of the story I put up. Example I brought up. Yeah, if you played during the American Civil War and you whitewash that, why are you playing during the American Civil War? Yeah.
Right, and if somebody says, you know, I want to play a woman, and you're like, that's great, fantastic. And these are the roles offered to you in the American Civil War. I could be wrong, but I don't believe
you could be a seamstress.
I don't believe there was any female soldier. I don't know when women were allowed into the armed forces in American history, but I doubt if it was during the Civil War. Maybe in the South. Maybe the Confederate Army. I don't know. I don't know enough about American Civil War.
The rules change a bit.
But yeah, exactly. Like in if you want to play Nazi Germany, you say, I'm 15, I want to be a soldier. Yeah, you can. I'm 90, I want to play a soldier. 1945? Go ahead. You're a soldier. Mm. Yeah, so I would just, be upfront with the character. Look, we're actually playing historically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I want to play an Asian character in the American Civil War. And it's like, you were making, I don't know enough about that time period. I think you were doing the railroads. And they were just shipping over Chinese immigrants. I don't even know if they were calling them immigrants.
Probably not.
To help build the railroads.
Could be a great story too.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. Maybe you don't do that anymore.
You escaped from it, and you're constantly trying to keep away from people.
Yeah, that changes the game.
Yeah. But anyway, that's
and you'll do that, and the other players are going to have to, if they like you or whatever, they're going to be covering for you in these different.
And I absolutely agree. Like that can. Allowing that kind of color, well, sorry, that no pun intended on that, into your game.
I don't believe that at all.
Freudian slip my ass.
Allowing that kind of color into your game, I'm still going to run with it. It just opens up more doors, more possibilities for interesting things to happen, interesting stories to be told.
And which is exactly the same thing I said about playing an opposite gender PC.
Yeah, if there's a point. Yeah, if there's a point to doing it. But I also think ethnicity, is there a point to playing?
If you don't think about it, no.
No, you just kind of went back to your own point.
You expected me to change?
Oh, he wanted to win.
thought I would trick you. So, just a couple of things that can actually lend a little flavor.
Mm-hmm. Not color, flavor.
Flavor. What about voices? Do you think that adds?
Me? No, never. I hate doing
you
voices.
Asked the wrong person.
I love doing the voices. Even though I'm terrible at them, I really enjoy it.
I'm flips of the coin. I'm terrible at doing voices and don't.
Oh, you did a little Lucky Charms for the Leprechaun.
Yeah,
Changeling game.
Because this is a do as I say, not as I do. I agree they add a lot of flavor to the game. Mm-hmm. I'm just terrible at doing them.
Well, talking like we did the campaign confessions before, but like one of the players, Tom, not you, Tom, another Tom, he didn't like the voices, and he said that was really lame, and he said stop it, and I did, and I really regret doing that. I wish I had kept it up.
Did he say that in front of us?
I think so. I think he said at the table. He didn't say it like mean or directly or anything like that. It's like, dude, that's lame.
And so. Can I say what? Maybe perhaps why? And I don't remember Tom saying this, but maybe he thought you were actually using very stereotypical voices for the dwarves.
Could be.
That's why. Yeah, I think you were using like a Scottish accent.
I was using
so everybody's like. Especially since the Lord of the Rings movies, probably like using the gruff Scottish voice
to be
the dwarves.
But I was doing that for everything. Like I went with a British
accent. Gruff Scottish voice for everything.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
I was like, just stop.
I tried doing different versions of the English.
Are we in Scotland? No,
elves got British, halflings got Irish.
Did they? I didn't notice the elves.
Because I think they all blended together.
I stopped doing it because, like I said, I'm not really that good at it. Well, yeah. Also, you went with it. You went to try and do Michael Caine as an accent for your character.
Really? I was actually trying to do received pronunciation, and you got. I kept slipping out of it.
You said Michael Caine, though, and you did slip out of it.
I didn't use Michael Caine at all.
You said that.
All right, so anyway.
Clash!
Not the clash you're looking for. Well, I'll say that it's kind of hard to do voices consistently. Because, I mean, you know.
It is.
Sometimes in, like.
I will try nonetheless.
I think it does add. I think in a case where, as a storyteller, where I added a lot. By using the voice was Teresa in Vampire.
Don't forget Mueller. Man.
Yeah, he was less of an accent and more of a way of speaking.
More of a way of speaking. Which,
I mean, he spoke quite slowly.
And the
prince is good. And again, not an accent, but a speaking style.
And with the prince, I try to do the voice of the actor I use for his picture,
it's
Lance Reddick.
You use the same body language when you do the prince as you do when you are thinking yourself.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you lean backwards and put your fingertips together like that.
Again, I'm just what I do, and the prince happens to be an African American, the actor, of course, for the picture, he's African American. Well, actually, the prince is Ethiopian.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. African.
But I've used he has an Ethiopian name, and the actor I think kind of looks Ethiopian to me, and basically I'm not Ethiopian, of course, but I basically try to mimic that actor when I play him. Mm. So he's Lance Reddick from The Wire and Fringe. So I basically do that with Teresa, who is the picture.
Hispanic.
She's Hispanic. So I basically use
Puerto Rican. Was it?
I try to do a Guatemalan accent, but she's really Mexican. Basically, I'm using the actress that she's based off of played a Guatemalan character in Friday Night Lights. So I try to do her accent.
Wow.
Man, stories within stories.
You're right. That's quite the trail to follow.
But I'll say this. I appreciate the voices. It really helps you differentiate between.
It really is.
Or not even, doesn't, yeah, like you said, it doesn't have to be accent. It could be manner of speaking.
Yeah. The body language you use.
Body language as well.
For that that mannequin character.
Oh, okay.
That female, one of the female characters who has a body of a mannequin, and you give her a very jerky body language, and I think that adds to her. I think it's more important for a storyteller to differentiate with voices and body language than for a player, because a player might be...
Well, a player has
to, like, if they're doing a different voice the whole time, that can be quite tough.
Yeah.
Is it?
Especially when other players are paying you out and going, oh, your accent slipping, or calling your upper crust English accent Michael Caine.
I'm still going to find the Facebook post where you said I'm doing Michael Caine.
All right, anyway, I guess.
I'm doing Michael Caine.
That's because the storyteller has so many more characters to portray, and keeping them straight can be difficult.
Also, they don't have to play that different character as long,
or that's true.
They don't have. They can turn it on and off, and then they can give themselves a break by having characters that speak in their own voice.
Except for you guys, when you captured the villains, tied them up, and carried them around with you all the time.
Oh, you had to use that little in voice.
Oh yeah.
But that really added to that.
Yeah,
character,
it did.
That little creepy voice.
Yeah.
And I think I'm trying to do. I'm not doing a false falsetto for the female character, but I am trying to do Carrie Fisher's voice.
Oh, sorry, my laughing was Yujiro did a false falsetto when he played one of the princesses that has an NPC.
That's
hello!
Which is honestly, that's funny, because that's the voice I used when I played the transsexual character in my game.
Speaking, I thought he's a transvestite.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Transvestite.
Wrong one. Yeah.
But speaking of that, you said you were going to get to playing gay?
No, I didn't say I was going to get to playing gay, but I said I was going to be gay. You want a little rest for the spit take? Well, no. I think the gay thing was just, you have to... I lost my train of thought on that.
Would being playing a gay character if you're straight, or I guess playing a straight character if you're gay, would that really...
No more than playing a woman if you're a man, or a man if you're
a
woman.
Yeah, I don't see that any difference.
Sorry, you think it's as much big of a... I don't think it's... I would say your sexual orientation would be, like, way down there. Like, much less than ethnicity or gender.
Once again, but getting back to, like we said before with ethnicity, is it depends a lot on who the person is. Like, if you're someone who defines themselves primarily as a gay person, then your mannerism will be much different than a gay person who defines himself as, say, an American.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
I know it's kind of a cop-out to say that it's just kind of a personal issue, but...
How you define yourself. No, that's good. Yeah.
No, sorry, I think I would put it...
But I wouldn't lump it in with gender, because
I agree.
Man or woman.
Well, like I said, I think that there are specific biological differences in the way that men and women behave and think, and I don't know that that's necessarily the case with gay guys.
I know
some gay guys who I would say that about, but other ones that I wouldn't, so I think it's more a personal issue.
I think I was going to say, I know we're going to sort of touch on this in a future episode, but sort of similar to the ethnicity thing, I was going to kind of touch on sexuality, and that if it's something you should think about if you're going to play an opposite gender character.
What your sexuality is?
The sexuality of the character, and how you want to deal with it in the game. So I'll give you an example, right? So when I first looked in Vampire, when we were going to play Vampire, I considered playing a female character.
Right.
Then I had the idea of playing the character I am, which uses seduction. Seduction as a sort of... That's who he is. He's the sort of the ultimate smooth operator. And then I decided, no, I don't want to play a woman, because I would not be comfortable playing a woman who played that role.
Okay.
That's not something I want to explore.
Right.
So the female characters I have played are sort of, again, sexuality doesn't come into it at all. I believe there was like the...
So you're saying if you're going to play a different gender, consider their sexuality.
I
don't think you're saying consider their sexuality. What you're saying is whether they're going to be a sexual being or not.
Yes,
because
yes.
I think the default's going to be people are going to assume that you're heterosexual.
Yes.
Unless you specifically say, I'm playing a woman, but she's going to be a lesbian. At a gaming table, don't do that.
No, I guess sexuality is the wrong word. Because
hold on, Chris is still making out with that woman.
sexuality is the wrong word.
But, keep going.
No,
what else do you?
Yeah, man, that would make Tyler Sessions a lot more interesting, wouldn't it?
But Tyler bisexual, haven't you? Is Tyler bisexual?
You did make out with a dude.
For lack of a better term, yes, I guess.
In the vampire, because vampires view feeding as a sensual experience, or some of them view feeding as a sensual experience. So it's often assumed that people are going to feed on the... If people feed in a sexual way, they're going to feed on the opposite sex. But your character feeds on men and women.
Well, yeah,
and they have to be attractive.
Until we actually... Because the characters have sort of been...
Until we went there.
Yeah,
until we went there, I actually hadn't thought of it. I had said... When I made him, I actually said...
So you more fell out of the closet.
Yes, I fell out of the closet. Funny. So when I made Tyler, I actually said, he only feeds on women.
You know, that honey trap consisted of you just being in the same car as the guy. I don't want you to make this sound like I had... There was some scenario where the guy is in, like, a silk robe and nothing else. No, he was in a car. You were in a car. You're like, well...
Could have put him in different seats, like him in the front and him in the back, but...
All right.
No, you really had to put him in the same part of the car.
I think he crawled into the back seat.
No,
I
don't know. That's
this is getting off. Bypass the front seat.
This is getting off topic.
I could have put the other guy in the trunk. Like,
who's driving?
The point I was trying to make,
perfume.
Yeah.
Does sex play a role in your game? And in a game like D&D, it doesn't. It can.
In the D&D game that I ran,
D&D game that Chris ran, it didn't.
Because I played all the women and no one wanted
exactly.
to
Exactly. Where like, I wouldn't have had a problem playing a woman in Chris's 4E D&D game. Because they're essentially the same.
Then it gets back to my point. I wouldn't do it, because I would play a woman more in a game like Vampire, where sexuality and sexual situations are gonna play a more prominent role, because then it's like, oh, I want to. That would be an interesting challenge. Yeah. And how would I be in a? How would I seduce as a woman versus how would I seduce as a man?
Absolutely. Yeah, like the D&D game that we played was entirely about external conflict. Mm-hmm. You know, like
it'd actually be a lot easier to play as a woman.
Yeah, yeah,
there's the joke. I don't want to be offensive or anything. Like, what's a blonde's pickup line? I'm so drunk. And I think I that's funny because it's more like playing it like the way men are pretty indiscriminate when they're in the bar. Mm-hmm. You know, just like whatever.
Yeah.
What time is it? 1 o'clock. What's around? Whereas men have to work a little bit harder. And that's a stereotype, but I think it's a stereotype that stands and is supported by.
I'll say this: I think you should talk with the storyteller and the other players and find out what kind of game you're playing before you decide a character to play, and that could go for anything, because you know you develop this character, ethnic or gender, whatever, and you say, I really want to explore this issue, and the GM kind of didn't have that story planned. Unless you have that communication, your character's going to fall flat, or you're not going to enjoy the game as much. I think that was my main point. You should talk to the GM and the other players about what kind of game it is before you decide your character.
Well, absolutely. That should go with any kind of game.
And it should go with any game. Yeah. But I think you have to have that kind of extra communicative step if you are going to touch on, say, racism or sexuality.
You know, like we're saying, if playing a woman isn't going to matter, then it'd be nice to know that before you choose to play one.
Like you had a point.
Absolutely. No, I guess just finally, when we said we were going to touch on, I guess we're at the back of the bus, we were going to touch on fantasy folk and alien races, and I guess the only point I would make is use that as kind of like a surrogate to explore different like ethnicity issues. And I think instead of having like a super vanilla setting where not only all the human ethnicities and both genders are equal and no one bats an eye, but all the different races can walk into a bar and no one cares. I say a science fiction setting or a fantasy setting that actually deals with people are going to react differently to different races.
Yeah,
I'd say it's human nature, but so play that up. You know, do people fawn over elves? Then play that up.
I actually tried to bring more of that into the D&D campaign, but it kind of fell flat at the beginning.
I was actually going to make my character, who's an Eladrin, who's like an elf. Mm-hmm. It's basically an elf race, and I was considering making him a racist at that one point.
Yes, I remember.
And then I decided I didn't really want to do that because then it didn't really fit into the story very well, and decided to make it a kind of a love interest.
Yeah.
Where his reaction of this elvish princess
potentially marrying
a human prince, he had a negative reaction to that.
Really cool. I like that.
And
a lot.
Initially I was going to say it was because the human prince was beneath the elvish princess because she was a different race. And then I thought, no, how about we just do it? He's just jealous.
Yeah.
He's fallen for this princess, and he's a little bit jealous and doesn't know why. His initial reaction is, that human is not good enough for her.
Yeah.
But really, it was like no one was good enough for her. Okay. And I don't know what kind of story and how interesting it would have been to play him as a racist, and that's why I backed away from that.
Yeah, we tried that.
I thought there was more with the love
stuff. I had so many people, like, they didn't know about Eladrin, so they constantly called you an elf. At the beginning, like, that was, you kind of, we played back and forth with it, but, you know, just, I kept doing it throughout, but it kind of just became a non-issue. Also, I was going to have, at the beginning, we had everyone address your character, Wayne.
Because I was the only human, yeah.
Exactly, but you didn't really take much of a leadership role, so.
But yeah, and then I think that's also the way that a story progresses, because it's also hard if you have one of the elf characters, the Eladrin, is basically saving the kingdom in numerous times. It's really hard for them to go, what are you doing here?
By the end, exactly. There's no reason that they wouldn't talk to you first.
Right, and it could have been a case where they're thinking, oh, he's one of the good ones, in quotation marks, you know, like,
But
he's okay.
I am that deep, so.
Yeah, no, but he's okay. But I mean, it would have fit in within the story, is that the reaction to the Eladrin, because he actually stopped becoming an Eladrin, or
he became a hero.
Yeah,
he actually became an individual.
Right.
or the other thing is no one wanted to explore it, because as you said, everybody just kind of...
You're busy killing cultists.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody just kind of let those things go and said, you know what?
But that's the thing, yeah. Like,
the focus of the story is this. Yeah, I don't really want to pursue
that. That's entirely external conflict, not internal.
Yeah. Well, maybe a final thought? I guess my final thought about this issue is potentially can be quite sensitive and explosive. Mm-hmm. So know your gaming group, mm-hmm. but don't ignore the rich opportunities that playing a different ethnicity and gender offer. And if you're going to ignore it, then don't bother playing it. Stick with your own kind, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's my final thought. But I really think it offers a lot to a game, both as a storyteller, as a game master, and as a player. And it's certainly something that people should look to explore and really, really push themselves in their acting and in their what kind of stories they want to tell.
And I'd say go from the character first. Like, first decide who your guy is, what you want him, her to be, and then go from there, and how does their race, their gender affect those things, or how does it create them?
I think you guys both made good points.
Well, I know we did.
Yeah, I know. I guess my final point would, especially in a fantasy setting, decide what role the aliens, quote-unquote, will be. That includes fantasy races, and then decide if you want them to be just another part of society or the actual alien outsiders.
And how they're treated by it.
And if they are actually aliens, try to come up with an alien mindset for them. Mm. Don't play them as humans.
Cool. We touched on it before, but seduction and how that can be incorporated into your games, we're going to cover in a later episode. Mm-hmm. Might be awkward.
To say on that one.
Might be a little bit awkward, but again, it's an opportunity for like really rich games that we can't ignore. However big a dwarf it's going to look like when we have that discussion.
But that's one away from the next. Next one is going to be the introduction to gaming.
And then thanks to John again for suggesting this. And then we'll also be doing like kind of an intro to gaming podcast, basically explaining.
I just said that.
Yeah, but I thought I was kidding.
All right.
But you said it better. All right.
BattleTech does it better. Go ahead.
So look forward to those two. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and thanks for all the people that gave us a shot. Hopefully that you're still around by episode 5. All right. Well, take care.
See you then. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Idle Red Hands is recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.